Everybody ready to do this thing?
Why it takes a half an episode to get the microphones and the headphones straightened out is beyond me.
You want to turn that fader up?
Bonkers. Yeah, of course I'm going to ski. What is this? Bonkers. I guess we have a new intro song.
Oh, it would have been funnier if the fader was up from the beginning.
I don't know why the fader wasn't up.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
You guys zap my positive energy from the show by springing a new intro song on me that uses me.
You're just restarting it a whole bunch.
Well, it usually shuts it off.
It does usually shut it off. Hey, why don't we get started with episode 14.
Yeah.
How to Ski It, the podcast for skiers, by skiers, about skiers. And with a snowboarder in for good measure.
Sometimes snowboarding.
You got to speak into that fancy mic there, Dylan.
Directly into it.
Right into it.
There it is.
Well, Dylan's remote today, if you wonder why he sounds like he's so far away. And we talked about, we got the new studio built, and it has made no difference into background noise and things like that.
Not worth the money.
Not worth the money so far, that is for sure. Let's get started. So, a couple ski days to report on, and then we're going to dump into a couple subjects that I think our listeners will be annoyed by.
Interested, though. I think they're going to want to chime in, honestly.
But first was, we went and did an afternoon session at Eldora on Friday. It was mobbed. It was so mobbed. I've only parked in the upper lot like five times in my whole life, all Saturdays. And we parked in the upper lot on Friday, me and Ryan.
At 2 p.m.
Yeah, more like 1:15. Yeah, we started skiing before 2 p.m. And then no lift lines, though. So 8 trillion nice. People on the mountain, but no lift lines to talk about. And the coolest thing about skiing on Friday at Eldora was me and Ryan skied dangerously, recklessly. And not recklessly to anybody else on the mountain. We skied tree runs, and we skied twice as fast as you should. And then we did a duet in the same line all day.
That's awesome.
And I do remember distinctly one time thinking, I wonder if Ryan's in this line next to me, because I could hear him. And then I had to ski over to it to miss something. And then he was just on top of me. He was like my backpack.
I was like 6 inches from the back of his skis. But it was a good time. The snow, it was nuking all day.
Nuking.
Like you get it to the top of the chair and you're brushing, you know, half an inch of snow off your chest. It was impressive. The snow conditions were good.
And the snow That's conditions awesome. Were excellent. But what really stands out to me about that day was how crazy dangerously we skied. And we don't you don't go up to the mountain saying I'm gonna risk life and limb in the trees. And we skied like 2x faster than usual.
It was weird.
And for the first time ever, I think Ryan made like way more turns than me, because when I started skiing with Ryan, he didn't turn that much.
Yeah,
and not in a bad way. He just was one of those really direct skiers, and now he skis and turns lots of times. But and then I feel bad for Ryan because he didn't go on Saturday and me and Marcus went on Saturday.
Yeah.
Back to Eldora. What kind of fool goes to Eldora on a Saturday on President's Weekend?
With fresh snow.
With 10 inches 10 of inches, snow.
Yeah.
And I'll say it right here. It was the best day of the year so far.
It was amazing.
It was amazing.
Fresh tracks on multiple runs we took.
And a bluebird day.
Bluebird.
And probably one of the most overused terms. And my understanding, and I think if you even just like Google it, a bluebird day means like blue skies, like no clouds, but also fresh snow. And so a lot of people just call a sunny day a bluebird day. And this was a true bluebird day. We skied the front side at Eldora first. What a great idea, because everybody heads to the back.
Yeah. And what was Imperial Trees?
Yeah, that's what we call it. It's Challenger, the trees off Challenger, but Imperial Trees. And it was incredible.
It was awesome.
A plus.
Yeah.
And then we went to the back and skied everything. Not everything. You know what? I haven't been down Salto Glade this year, but we skied the ridge on Moose Glade. We skied Bryan Glades. We skied both Gully Glades.
Yep.
And just fantastic. Broke tracks three runs into the day. Waited in one of the longest lift lines I've ever seen on Corona, all the way up the hill past the slow sign.
Yep.
And then everybody panicked and left.
And then the next lift was like 3 minutes max.
And then we stayed longer than we usually do on Saturday because the lift lines went away.
Yeah. It was awesome.
It was a great day. It was easily, for me, the best day of the year. We didn't ski at that breakneck speed that me and Ryan did, but yeah, it was just a good day. And then we went over to do one run on Indian Peaks. And I would have to say, like, the most advanced run, in my opinion, at Eldora would be Placer Glades or Indian Peaks Lift Line Trees. And it sucked.
Yeah.
Like, really? It was full of rocks and had been somehow baked out by sun. So the snow hadn't stuck to it and it was all gone. But if you can stay on those northerly facing runs, I'm sure the skiing's still good up at Eldora today.
Yeah. It was weird because you went down the tree run under Indian Peaks Lift. And so I went down Ambush and it was terrible. The moguls were like waist high and no fresh snow. It was just ice all the way down it. It was weird how good the other runs were and how bad that one was.
And that's how it's weird because Indian Peaks Lift Line Trees faces north, but it had like that easterly facing snow conditions. But Bryan Glades, Gully Glades, Moose Glades, all as good as they get.
Yeah.
As few pieces of rock and scraps on the run as Eldora ever has.
Yeah, it was sweet.
I was surprised, you know, riding the Corona lift, you see the water pipes. Most of them were covered. And I feel like in the last couple of years, I haven't seen that this time of year.
Yeah.
Usually they're poking out. And like a lot of that stuff right there before it opens up was covered with snow. They have a decent snowpack this year, surprisingly to my, you know, it hasn't snowed a ton down in Boulder, but up there it must be getting a couple inches every night. It's filling in pretty good.
Yeah, they started slow. And Ryan brings up a good point. And this is like for every ski area has some kind of weird barometer you can pay attention to. And the irrigation pipes at Eldora are a pretty good barometer. When those disappear on like Westridge and other places, or they have to dig them out under the Corona lift because the Corona lift will come down too close to the snow. You know, it's skiing well.
Yeah, definitely.
So kudos. Like we did all this traveling to ski and went to all these fantastic resorts. And as every year, then it just ends up at Eldora because we live in Boulder, Colorado, and everybody has a ski area. Hopefully that's the closest to their house. And I'll say it again, Eldora's not the best ski area in Colorado, but it's my favorite.
Yeah.
It delivers.
It delivers.
It gets, you know, it scratches the itch. It definitely is worth the trip.
Yeah, and it's still capable of having excellent conditions. It's got great runs, and it's so close that not having to fight, even if you have to fight traffic, the traffic you fight, usually you're still on the road less time than if you were going on I-70 normally.
And if you drive an electric car, you get to park at the very front and get car charging, which I do.
It was awesome. That was nice.
Yeah.
On Saturday, it's front row parking.
Well, before we move on, what time did you get there? How was traffic? I know we talked about the lift lines, but the parking situation can be a headache over there.
We got there too early. Like with an electric car, you need to be there by 8 and you can park in the front. We got there like
7:30.
Yeah, 7:20, 7:30. So then you just get to watch what I call the electric car follies for some reason. And I'm an electric car owner, so if you are, don't, but electric car owners are just unique people and they think they should get to park however they want. And they think, you know what, the South Park about Smug, which I get is about a Prius, not an electric car, is dead nuts on how electric car owners are.
Yeah.
That they just, we didn't see any major parking disputes, but I have every time I've parked there. But we did see a guy just walk across the road, grab a cone, and cone off a spot for his friend that showed up later, which was, you know.
Ah, come on.
It's not cool, but smart.
Marcus, for the more intermediate skiers of ourselves, which I think of you and me, how do you feel like your skiing was this weekend? Do you feel like, because I feel like you've been progressing super fast.
Marcus is no longer an intermediate skier.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It felt great. I still
have stuff to work on. What was your favorite new run that you never hit before? I assume you hit some.
Yeah, I had never been in either the Gully Lick Glades or the Ridge. What was that, Moose Glades Ridge?
Yeah, it's called Moose Glades, but it's the Ridge. There's three Moose Glades, and then there's the Ridge.
Okay.
And so that would be, I call it Moose Ridge.
Got it. I think, so the lower half of Moose Ridge was amazing. It was like no one had skied on, like right up to the rope line. And so there was just, it was just lush, so lush, just crushing through there. It was awesome. Nice. I think that was my favorite from that day.
Yeah, I bet I would have agreed.
And we talked about this. The upper part was tracked out,
yep,
but still fresh. But then the bottom part was like everybody must have cut out.
Yeah. And
the bottom part, it gets way easier. So you really get to like loosen it up. And there's that place where there's a turn where you go under the boundary rope only for 20 feet, 15 feet.
Not even. Yeah. It's one like turn. Right under it. Yeah.
So it's not like you're cutting the rope, but it's exciting because you go under the boundary rope and then you shoot back out into the ski area. And it's if you haven't skied Eldora, Moose Glade, just follow the boundary line till it kicks you back into the chairlift, and it's one of the best runs they have, because a lot of their runs, if you wanted to complain about Eldora, are short, but that one kind of stretches it all out and is double diamond. I don't think it deserves the EX. No run that Eldora deserved.
I agree.
Placer Glade's the only run at Eldora that deserves the EX.
Because it ends in that cliff?
Because it has a cliff in it. And and it's not even the cliff. It's the way people have dug all the snow out of the cliff, sidestepping through it and stuff. So
even if you want to jump off the cliff, there's no landing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a ski around cliff.
Yeah, or ski through.
I've only skied there like once or twice, and it's super tight, super steep, and you don't... Yeah.
That. Yeah.
And I was telling Marcus, like, the thing that I don't like about Placer Glade is the top is really easy. It's really soft. People don't ski it, and you're thinking, why is nobody back here? And then you get to this cliff that you have to navigate through, which, again, isn't crazy. You're not going to fall to your death or anything like that. It's like a 15, 20-foot cliff that has some little chutes in between it, and you got to pick one and go, and then it's in the trees, so you can't just, like, straight line it out.
Yeah.
So now it makes me want to go up there and ski it.
Yeah. Sold.
Talking about
especially with all the fresh snow, you know, no one's been back there.
It was so funny because Dave was like, all right, so there's Placer Glades. It's right over there. It's that kind of open area you can see. He's like, it's really awesome. And then you get to this cliff, and every time I ski it, I get to the cliff and I go, oh man, why did I do this? Like, so you, I mean, we can do it. I you'll live.
And you'll remember.
Well, there are a couple cliffs. One that I can think of over on Moose Ridge. It's well marked though, and you know it, you can ski around it. It's navigable.
Yeah, if you don't follow the boundary line on Moose Ridge, you ski down the ridge and then kind of stay to your right, you'll run into a 10-15 foot cliff that is way skiable if you can spot it first, because again, there's trees everywhere, so you have to pick where you're going to land, not in direct line with a pine tree.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
That's always the best
one. And there's a landing and a run out, but you better be a really strong skier, because when you land, you're gonna be going Mach 10.
All right, let's move forward into, we're going to talk about some controversial subjects on the show today, which we don't always, but I'd like to start with the a controversial subject, I-70.
Not controversial at all.
And
no, everyone hates it.
I was wrong. Like I said, our civic leaders hadn't done anything, and CDOT hadn't done anything. And lo and behold, on February 15th, they did something. They sent out a warning about how bad it was going to be this weekend. And I just, when have we gotten to where it's acceptable to go 30 years without any substantial improvement? And remember, the toll lanes are not substantial improvement. They're toll lanes that cover about a third of the journey, maybe less than that.
Yeah.
So maybe 25% of the journey, costs good money, like 10 bucks.
Yeah.
And it's only allowed to be open 100 days a year. And so the solution this weekend was just to tell people to give yourself an extra 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, it's insane.
I woke up Saturday morning at 6 and looked at the map, and it said 3.5 hours to Keystone.
Ooh.
At 6.
Yeah.
And so I had made up my mind Friday night that I was going to sleep in and hang out, but
yeah,
man, that didn't, what do you do? You just, you don't go skiing.
Yeah.
You go to Eldora.
Oh yeah, yeah, you go to Eldora.
We're going to rub that one in for a while because it was a good day.
It was awesome.
But then to be in all seriousness, another subject that at least, and maybe I don't understand it, but it chaps my hide a little bit, is the SSA, the Skiers Safety Act here in Colorado, and not to be confused with the Skiers Responsibility Code. Right. So if you Google the Skiers Safety Act, sure enough, a couple entries down comes in the Skiers Responsibility Code, which is completely different. Skiers Responsibility Code, stay in control, you know, uphill skier, you know, downhill skier has the right of way.
Yeah.
All these things that Marcus read through them on one of our previous podcasts, all common sense stuff.
It is worth noting that the SSA does refer to that as a point of like a responsibility of the skier to follow. It specifically cites the responsibility code as an obligation of the skier.
It's a duty of the skier.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with that. It is a duty of the skier. And so the Skiers Safety Act is legislation in Colorado, or laws, not legislation, laws in Colorado that shield the resorts from the same responsibility that you and I have. So if you and I get in a car wreck and cause it or anything like that, you know, there isn't a whole lot shielding us except our insurance company. And hopefully it wasn't your fault, but if it was your fault, there's nothing shielding you except your lawyer.
Yep.
And the Skier Safety Act, on the other hand, limits claims to 2 years, limits claims to $1 million.
$250,000.
Yeah, well, $250,000, unless you can prove like gross negligence, then you can come up for $1 million. And there are some factors in there that override it, like gross negligence and things like that.
Yeah.
But in general, the Skiers Safety Act was put into law to protect mom and pop ski areas, privately owned ski areas, and stuff like that. And now it's protecting giant corporations with record profits who are making tons of money. And their argument is, if this doesn't protect us, the price will go up. Kids won't be able to ski, yada, da, da, da. Same thing you hear anytime anybody tries to have any restrictions put on them. They're like, it's going to cost more.
Yep.
And so I, for one, think it's time to make some changes. And Marcus, I can tell you have something to say, so why don't you fill us in a little bit more on the Skier Safety Act? And then I'll just give you my opinion for the changes. And again, everything here is opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
As skiers. And I surely don't want it to be more expensive. And I surely don't want it to be difficult for children to ski because maybe it's not safe for them and things like that. But I think those are all BS arguments from big corporations.
Yeah, it definitely is.
That I love.
I want to be very clear on that.
I love you.
It's so hard because it's all major corporations now who are turning in record profits year over year. And then they're the ones saying, well, we have to have this or the prices go up. And it's interesting because we posted about this on Reddit. There is a How to Ski at Reddit now, if you're interested. But we posted and cross-posted to the skiing subreddit. And it's wild how divisive this issue is. We posted the article that is discussing a current case that's going to the Colorado Supreme Court about a 16-year-old girl who fell from a lift in Crested Butte and is now paralyzed for life. And the family is arguing that there was negligence on the part of the lift operators for not stopping the lift immediately when the issue occurred, whenever there was a problem getting on the lift. It's interesting because we watched, looking on Reddit, people are like, well, if they rule against immunity, just wait to see your season pass rates next year. But in the US, it's literally already higher than anywhere else in the world.
And again, we're talking about extremely profitable companies that
extremely.
Are acquiring other ski areas at a breakneck pace. Let me tell you what you don't acquire at a breakneck pace if you don't have tons of dough is other companies or other ski areas.
Yeah.
So for them to act like this is going to be some, and again, the Crested Butte one is confusing because there is some response. First of all, the skiers need to take responsibility, but from what I read, the person wasn't able to get on the chairlift all the way, hung as long as they could and then dropped. Yes, somebody should have caught that.
Yeah.
Yes, there should have. Like, I think, isn't there usually like one of those brakeman switches that hang, there should be, that hangs down, that if you're dangling, it should, like, that keeps you from going around the pole wheel at the top. So there could be some things that could be done. But bottom line, you know, and I wasn't, none of us were there. So was it reasonable that the lift ops saw this happening? I don't know. I'm sure the person feels awful.
Right.
But this isn't about like this one person's mistake. This is about like a shielding of a, of it's Vail that owns Crested Butte. So Vail Associates or Vail Resorts is what they're called now.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one. And a little personal history I have with the Skiers Safety Act is a person I knew got killed by an inbound avalanche at Mary Jane Winter Park, maybe 15 years ago. And then where does it fall there? Like, we all know the risks, like the skiing that we did this weekend, it wasn't unreasonable to think that an avalanche couldn't have started inbounds.
Right.
And we knew that. And so I get it. It's complicated. Where does negligence start and act of God begin or vice versa?
And I think when it talks a lot about the inherited risk of skiing, like, you know, if you go skiing, an avalanche could possibly happen. Are you expecting it inbounds? No, but you as a skier with the access should know that it's a possibility. So if you get caught in an inbounds avalanche, unless they clearly didn't rope off an area, even then, you are assuming these risks, putting your skis on and going skiing.
I think that's one of the huge talking points of this recent Supreme Court case, which is maybe redefining the currently broad scope that is an inherent risk, quote unquote. Like, what does that mean? To me, that means, avalanches, they could happen, collisions that could happen. Having an error on a lift where you would expect someone to help you if you have an issue, I don't know. Like, that is that an inherent risk? Yeah, the lifts are hard, but you would kind of think maybe we should reconsider, you know, what the responsibility of the lift operators should be. They're there to keep you safe on their equipment.
I don't believe that an inherent risk at a ski resort is me falling off the chair.
Right.
Like, I get that it is possibility. Like, it could happen to any of us, but.
But maybe we should talk about, is it? Should it be?
Yeah, I don't really.
Should they be protected more than a fuel tank truck driver? Like,
right.
That's the thing, is why are they protected? And why can't just regular common law, which, yes, is going to run up their legal bill, but there's been people hit by snowmobiles that weren't able to sue because, you know, it was just considered the price of doing business, basically. And it's a stretch to me. And again, what brought this conversation up is the lawsuit in regards to the girl falling off the chairlift in Crested Butte, and that Vail is trying, I'm not going to say hide because that's not fair, but they're using the Skier Safety Act, hoping to protect them. And these lawyers for the person that fell off the chairlift are trying to like punch through the Skier Safety Act, basically, which, you know, that's what the conversation is. Is it time to update it? Again, it was written for mom and pop ski areas that could not afford a lawsuit. And now it's protecting some of the most successful corporations.
Well, Marcus, did you say they made like $400 million last year profit? Yeah,
I believe, I looked it up, I think it is $386 million in net profit last year. That was a Vail.
Yeah, Vail, I think they can afford a couple more dollars for lawyers.
$263 million, sorry.
$263 million. That's a good, I don't want to comment on the scale if that's incredible. Like for an oil and gas company, that wouldn't be
right.
Amazing profits for some, or for a pharmaceutical, that might not be amazing profits. But I think in the ski industry, that kind of, and again, Vail is a global corporation. So that, again, I don't know how much that actually means.
How many areas did they acquire last year?
Yeah.
You know, how much did they spend? But,
and we'd love to hear your thoughts. There's a Reddit thread, or you can comment on any of our socials, and we'd love to keep this conversation going. But at the end of the day, it breaks down to the same thing, which is the problem with our government, not just on the state level, on the federal level, is there's only one group of people in our state legislature's ear.
That's the money.
Yeah, people with money, the global corporations that aren't necessarily looking out for the best interest of Colorado residents or Utah residents for that matter, or any other state. And that's a bummer, but that's how the government works. I mean, that's why there's a log jam in Washington, D.C., much less in the state of Colorado. And I'd love to hear some of our state representatives speak about this and not speak about it just with the corporate talking points. It's going to raise the price of lift tickets. I-70 is going to be more crowded. You know, that's going to be their answer, which doesn't yeah. make any sense.
What other effect does a global corporation like Vail have in places that are not the state of Colorado? Because the SSA really only applies to Colorado. Do you know of any equivalent titles and statutes in other states, countries, anything like that? I know there's nothing on a federal level in the United States.
Well, Marcus, go ahead, because I do know this. Montana, it's like the opposite. It's one of the reasons there's not a lot of, like, the kind of events we produce in Montana, because, like, blanket waivers don't work in Montana.
Interesting.
So, someone commented on the Reddit thread and brought up what happened in Oregon a few years back. They said that the result was two different lift ticket prices. They had bifurcated tickets. So you could either sign a liability waiver, because the Oregon Supreme Court essentially ruled that requiring a liability waiver to participate in the activity meant that you didn't have another option if you wanted to participate. And that was not lawful. So now they have bifurcated prices. You can either pay more and not sign a liability waiver, or pay the regular price and sign a liability waiver. That's wild.
That is wild.
Bring on insurance.
I know the dangers of skiing. My biggest danger skiing is not lift ops, is not chairlifts, yeah. it's trees.
Yeah. Mm.
I would sign the waiver.
Yeah,
and get the cheaper ticket. And so that may sound it kind of feels hypocritical to say that. Like, yeah, I'll just keep it the way it is for me. But I think with 50 some years of skiing experience, I understand where the dangers are. And I don't think chairlifts are a place to mess around, to be honest with you. I take that stuff serious every time that thing comes around.
Oh, yeah.
You'll notice me. I'm not talking to you guys. I'm like focused on getting on the chair, mainly from embarrassment of getting bowling balled.
I pretty much every time I get on the chairlift, grab onto it until I'm fully supported. And I usually hold onto it while I'm riding, just at least one hand. But whenever I get on, I usually put my hand over the back and grab on, make sure I'm secure. I don't know if you guys do anything like that. I mean, I've been skiing for 4 years, so.
Yeah, I put my hand over the back of the seat while I'm riding it.
Yeah.
Especially on the high spots or when it's windy.
I definitely still feel exactly that way, even though being like somewhat of an ex-lift op, I probably rival just as many chairlift rides as you do, and you're much older than I am. And I bet it rivals.
No,
not even close.
And yeah, I mean, I love having that experience. So I respect it, and it's something worth respecting.
Yeah. And so, I think I don't want necessarily to say we're going to leave this conversation right now, but where I want to leave it is let's just have the discussion and not just how to ski it bozos, but our state government, our general public, and even the corporations. Let's just have the discussion, because I think one of the things I would be worried about is the corporations get their way, they get their way, then they don't. And then that sometimes when there's that whiplash effect, it's extreme. And I think where we could ease some of the protections of the Skier Safety Act might be something to consider now, you know, rather than repeal it. I'm not suggesting that at all. Like, skiing is dangerous.
Yeah.
And when you, even if you go up on a green circle, you should be wearing a helmet. It's dangerous. Somebody might ski into you. That's not the ski area's fault, although there is places they could do better at patrolling that, like Straight Line City, which I would say is Copper Mountain.
Yeah.
And Eldora has us. I haven't seen Straight Line at Eldora since the back is open and that's where we ski.
Yeah.
Straight Line there, but
true. Keystone's really bad.
Straight Line City.
I will say before we move on, as a small business owner, how would you feel about it?
I would like to have legal protections for everything I do. I mean,
I think everyone would,
but I don't think that would be fair if I was allowed to go do what we do for a living. We produce sporting events and have these rock solid waivers that are like, oops, you know, the statue fell over, you know, price of doing business, price is going to go up. If we're not allowed to let the statue fall over on people, then that wouldn't be fair. And again, I'm not saying just repeal it. And we've gone back and forth about the state of the ski industry, and I think it's great. You're going to Eldora on Saturday, it's as good as it can be. Like, it's awesome. I'm not, you know, it's busy. It sure isn't busy in Gully Glades.
Right.
You know, it's one of the advantages of being an advanced skier is you can leave the crowds behind.
Yeah, definitely.
No, and I agree with that. We want people to be protected, but not so protected that there's no way to...
It is 40 years old.
To be compensated for a life-lasting injury.
Yeah, negligence or something that should have been fixed. They just need to take responsibility as an area for their mistakes, and they're totally protected that they don't have to.
And skiers need to take responsibility when they ski into trees or when, you know, honestly...
Or they duck a rope.
And this is where it gets complicated. I don't feel like inbound avalanches should necessarily be something that should... The protections should... It's dangerous. I know that. Yeah. We ski on 30, 40-degree slopes. Any 40-degree slope, no matter what the conditions, could break loose. We saw it on Paolo Vicini like 10 years ago. The whole thing broke loose in like April. The whole thing. I mean,
down to the grass.
And I know that that's a possibility. Anything that's 40 degrees, anything that's 30 degrees, even on a skateboard, is dangerous.
Yeah, very.
And people need to accept that. But when we're dealing with snowcats and snowmobiles and chairlifts and stuff like that, there shouldn't be these blanket protections. That's my opinion.
I mean, I think that makes sense. I wonder, so Colorado does not have a helmet law for motorcycles, correct?
Just eyewear.
Okay. I wonder, just pitching here. I know that some people sitting here aren't going to agree with all these statements. I love this subject. But what about, like, if you up the responsibility of the skier a little bit and up the responsibility of the resort a little bit. So helmets are now required skiing and safety bars are required when getting on a lift.
Yeah. Love that idea. The helmet thing's no big deal to me because I already wear one.
Agreed.
I mean, if you used to ski in a headband like I did, a helmet was like a major breakthrough, not only from a protection standpoint, but staying warm and keeping your ears warm and now having the music built in. Like, helmets are awesome.
Yeah.
So I think like there is a great place to start, that the safety bar is mandatory, and you know, how do you enforce it? I don't know, but like, let's not like go to the end of the solution and work back.
Right.
Let's put a solution in, and then helmets, good luck with that, because I believe we're the only of the 50 states that do not require a helmet on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
I personally love that law. I always wear my helmet on my motorcycle. I don't get on my motorcycle without my helmet. But I love that if you now everything's going to be super hypocritical. If you want to go out and kill yourself on your motorcycle, you can. I do think it's weird that they make you wear eye protection.
Yeah.
Like, you don't care about my brain, but you care about my eyeballs. Like,
that, well, that that's a little safety bit for other people. Other people, right? Because if so you get a rock in your eye, you're a danger to other people.
Yeah.
I get that.
I do too.
Limited danger because you're on a motorcycle and everybody else.
You might dent my car, all right?
You have another eye.
I will say the lift that I ran, we did make it a requirement to have the bar down. And you know what? We had some people that are like, I've been skiing for 50 years and I never use it. It's fine. But other than that, it was fine. It was enforceable. You just yell at people. And then if they don't, you stop the lift. And then everyone yells at them too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it when the lift op stops the lift because somebody didn't do what they were told. That's one of my favorite
things.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to.
Our mantra.
Ruin it for everybody.
Our mantra was the customer is never right. Because with the chairlift, that's just the way it has to be.
Yeah. And I think that would go for events a lot too.
Yeah, true.
I still live that way.
When you come to electricity at events, the customer and the athlete are never right.
Never.
So you cannot let them tell you what to do.
Any last thoughts on it's the SSA. Google it. You know what I thought was interesting is when you Google it, a whole bunch of law firms come up with Splainer. Their assessment or their splainer on it. And I'm not really sure why, because maybe that's to discourage. Is it to discourage you from calling them for help? Cause the one I read was like, good luck. And, or is it like, we understand this. And if anybody's going to punch through the SSA to get at somebody's money, we're the people. I don't know, but out of the top 10, eight of them were law firms explaining it. And then the other two were about the skier's responsibility code, which has nothing to do with it.
And don't Google SSA or you're going to get the Social Security Administration.
Skier Safety Act.
Yes.
Colorado, too.
Colorado, it's all different.
Colorado,
yep. To be clear, this is just for Colorado. And another thing, and I don't think this is being transparent since I've been kind of against the corporations on this conversation, but you know what? I'm a shareholder at Vail Resorts, and I have been for a long time, that at one point I was like, I'm going to invest in the things in my life that I use, which was, it worked out, but only because of pure luck. Don't necessarily do that.
I don't know. That's not bad advice.
It's not.
We're not financial consultants. You do not take our advice for anything financial. Do not come at us.
Don't take our advice for anything.
Don't take advice for anything.
Join our investment podcast and just invest in mutual funds and spiders and things like that. There you go. I said it. So dark times ahead for the How to Ski It gang.
Yeah, when we get kicked off all the mountains for talking about the Skier Safety Act.
I hope we don't, because I don't think we've been.
I think we just brought it up in conversation.
We brought it up in conversation.
I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I said real quick earlier, it's 45 years old. None of us want it to go away. We just want to talk about it and see if everything is still relevant. Can we make it better?
Yeah.
What role did Yan chairlifts make in the creation of the Skier Safety Act? There's a thesis.
That is somebody. A great idea for some research.
And we've said it literally half our shows, Google Yan chairlifts, and it's a sordid, crazy history of not safe chairlifts that are now safe and just so happen to be the best. They're in the best. They're the ones that haven't been upgraded that nobody skis because it's advanced skiing, so it doesn't need to be upgraded. The A-lift at Copper Mountain and Eagle Wind at Winter Park, and there's more. I can't think of all of them, but when I get on one and I notice it, I'm like, yeah. Y-A-N.
I'm curious, and I'm going to look this up when we break here, is what has not been changed since 1979 in the Skier Act?
Yeah, and you know what'd be great?
They make updates all the time, but what is still in there from the original document that hasn't been touched? That would be, I think, a good starting point on if we want to make changes. Let's look back to 1979, how different things were.
Yeah.
And how often ski resorts probably use that. And if you didn't know this, most of the ski resorts in Colorado, if not all, I mean, I guess I don't know the answer for sure, but they don't own the land that they're on.
Yeah.
They lease it from the Forest Service. And so how often when they're applying for a lease are they like, times have changed. We need to do an expansion because the industry's grown and it's changed and it's transformed. And that's their main argument to paying very little to lease public land. And then when it comes to the Skier Safety Act, they're like, nothing's really, you know, 45 years isn't really that long. So I'd love to not only get a lawyer on our podcast to talk about it, but, and I'm sure they wouldn't, but I would obviously invite anybody from inside the ski industry to talk about why they think it should stay unchained. And
yeah,
again, nobody wants the ski industry turned inside out. It's not broken to the point that it needs to be turned inside out. I will say that.
I can agree with that. Yeah. Like I said, we're not trying to rewrite it or get rid of it. We just want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Why hasn't it changed? Or maybe we're missing something.
I doubt it. But. So dark times ahead because we all leave town.
Oh. Yeah.
I wasn't going to tell Dylan this, but we're all heading. Well, Marcus isn't. Marcus could get some skiing
might
in.
Might be able to ski a little bit.
But the rest of us are heading to Las Vegas for the rock and roll marathon, Las Vegas rock and roll marathon. Dylan leaves Wednesday, and that's the day I'm hoping to go skiing Wednesday afternoon. Sorry. And then we come back and we come back on Monday, but we have events Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we go to Florida.
And Chattanooga.
Yeah. Also not the best
game. And Chattanooga.
For another sporting event, the Skyway 10K, and Ryan's going to the Chattanooga Marathon. We do events. And then, man, you're in March, and March is usually a good month, and I'm going to Crested Butte at the beginning of March, in between Skyway and then the Shamrock Run in Portland. I'm going to Crested Butte, so I will get that. But 2 weeks off the slope, you don't lose your fitness, but you lose your mental confidence.
Yeah.
And that's what I think shined the most for me this past weekend, and there's probably nothing more important in skiing than confidence, and you get it through fitness.
Yeah.
And then once you get that fitness, my confidence isn't like, can I make this next turn? It's like, where do I want to turn? And this is in steep trees. Like I can just make it up as I go. And that's going to be all gone by the time I go to Crested Butte, where it's probably going to be mandatory to have that back.
You're going to need confidence.
So hopefully going to stay fit. I'm hoping that I'm on a high hotel floor in Vegas and I'm going to try to use the stairs all week.
Ooh. All right. That's
we've also talked about the best running we do all year.
That's true.
Is the morning on the strip.
I'm a bit bummed I won't be there for that.
Dodging piles of vomit and just seeing the carnage from the night before. So running on the strip, and I'm not in good running shape right now. So it's going to be wogging, wogging on the strip.
Real quick before we wrap this up, number of days so far this year, you know how many?
I don't know. 12.
I'm probably like 10 or 12.
I'm 29.
I think I'm 15 at this point.
Yeah. And I wanted to get 50, and it seems it's not way out of reach, but it seems like it's a little bit out of reach. I bet I end up at like 35. Unfortunately, the season's coming to an end, and I don't know why, but when the snow melts up where I live, which is in the foothills above Boulder, the mountain bike comes out, and I don't like mountain biking more than skiing. Mm-hmm. But once
it's time, it's time.
It's time. And I don't like really hard snow. So once it's like 45 degrees one day and the next day it's 30, I'm out.
Yeah.
So that's just me.
Well, is there anything else we needed to cover?
It's been a great ski season so far. I don't want to sound like it's over, but I did feel like on Saturday, it's not going to get any better than it was. Yeah. And my skiing isn't going to get any better.
Yeah.
I'm 54 years old. My skiing's not going to get better than it was on Friday and Saturday. The conditions will not get better than it was on Saturday.
Oh, that was perfect.
At least they haven't been in the last 20 years at Eldora.
Yeah.
So it feels, I'm going to try to get 10 more days in if I can. I'm going Wednesday, Dylan. Sorry.
Well, I think that's it for this time. We are still planning to continue this podcast even through the summer. We're looking for exactly what kind of topics we're going to cover because we can't talk about our active skiing. But if you want to join in on the conversation about the Skier Safety Act, you can check out probably the best place is the Reddit thread. That is r-howtoskiit. There's a thread going on there. There's also one in r-skiing. And then you can follow us on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and YouTube, all at How to Ski It.
Here, hit that blue one.
Oh, you know what else you should mention?
What's that?
So we our website used to be pointed at our YouTube page, and now there's an actual website at howtoskiit.com.
Bonkers.
I was asked to hit that button.
I meant before you hit the red one.
I hope that you accidentally hit one of those buttons on one of our customers' podcasts.
Hit the green one.
That's nuts.
Hit the next one.
Down?
No.
All aboard.
Oh, hit that last one. I'm the best skier in the group.
That's kind of what it says.
Yeah, of course I'm going to ski.
And roll the outro.
All right. For Dave, Dylan, Ryan, I'm Marcus. We'll see you next time.
All aboard. Bonkers.
I liked our other song way better.
Me too, but this is funny. Ski.
It was funnier when I was bonkers.
All aboard.
Bonkers.
Nice, guys.